It's the Full 48. Howard Beck, senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. It's Friday, the 21st of August, and last night was the most blessed event of the NBA calendar. The lottery. I love the lottery. The lottery is great, but the lottery was weird. It was the weirdest lottery we've ever seen, to go along with the weird bubble games and eventually the probably even weirder draft sometime in the next couple months. They should just change the NBA, the old NBA slogan, and just make like NBA where weird happens, or it's weird-tastic or something. Anyway, the lottery is set, which means draft order is set, which means we can now seriously talk about who should be drafting whom. And to do that, I need draft wisdom. I need knowledge. I need insight. I got to bring back my man, Johnny Wass. Jonathan Wasserman, our BR draft guru. How are you, sir?
I'm weird. I'm doing good, though. I'm glad that we actually have something to talk about.
We do.
As opposed to just going through all the hypothetical situations. We actually have a draft order in place, so I'm kind of pumped to have something to talk about.
Yeah, much later than normal. It is weird. Like, we're talking about the lottery 2 months after we would normally have had the draft itself. Like, nothing, like, it's still, it's great that the NBA is back. I'm still, like, it is all still very, very surreal. But still, here we are. The NBA is moving forward. We know where everyone's drafting, and I can't wait to hear who you think everyone should get. We'll do probably what we do last year, like the eight. I think we went through eight on the day after the lottery.
Sounds about right.
Of course, we were in Chicago. We were doing this in a hotel room.
Right.
That was fun. Now we don't get to go anywhere. I haven't seen a hotel since March. It's the longest, I think, in my adult life that I've gone without seeing a hotel or being on a plane. So we'll get to that in a second. I want to quickly just discuss this, though. So there was movement again in the lottery. This is the second year now with the new lottery odds. And once again, there was like a little bit of fun volatility there, fun depending on who you're a fan of, I guess. You know, Minnesota had the third worst record by like a percentage point and moved to first. So that's fine. The top three all have the same odds. So that's not really a big change. Charlotte going from eighth, jumping up to third is a big deal. And in a different draft, we might have considered that a really big deal. Chicago jumps from seventh to fourth. So that was kind of interesting. And then we had the three teams that dropped. Atlanta going from fourth to sixth, the Pistons from fifth to seventh, and of course the Knicks from sixth to eighth, which caused everyone to break out in multiple rounds of Knicks mockery on Twitter last night. Which, by the way, all right, quick aside to my tangent. Tangent to my tangent. I know we all love making fun of the Knicks. It's like America's second favorite pastime, probably. Slipping two notches in this draft, Jonathan, does not seem like a big deal to me. Like, I think everybody was too eager to tee off on the Knicks last night. Like, we all love to do the LOL Knicks stuff, but come on. Like, they might have actually benefited in a draft. You tell me if I'm wrong. In a draft with no obvious standout talents or even like definable tiers, and maybe there are definable ones, but sixth to eighth is not a big drop, and you actually do commit to less in terms of the rookie scale, and you may get a similar talent, right? Am I wrong?
Blessing in disguise. I mean,
yeah.
Of course, LaMelo Ball is the guy who I think fans wanted, and
sure,
he's number one on my board, and he fits exactly what they could use, some flash and a ball handler and passing. But at the same time, you know, if you're not going to get LaMelo Ball, it really doesn't matter if you get two or if you get eight. And to go from six to eight, I think the guy that maybe makes sense for them, they could have taken at six anyway, he's going to be there at eight. So
yeah.
I don't think it's a big deal. I still think they're going to get a good player. May not be a star, but they wouldn't have probably not got a star at, you know, number two or three anyway.
Yeah, I'm not sure anybody's going to be that upset about slipping a little in this year's draft or seeing somebody else leapfrog them. I mean, you always want to have control over your pick. Like, the value sometimes is not, well, it's the best player that you can get. It's more like, well, no, you can decide. You've got more options available to you, if nothing else. But it does come with a higher salary slot too, and so if the talent is all similar, then maybe it's not that big of a deal. Anyway, it's the second year in a row that we've had some movement with these new odds. I still don't know if it's going to deter tanking. I think that what we've seen with the play-in tournament in the bubble would be the better approach to keeping teams engaged down the stretch, and maybe in concert with these new odds. So anyway, I wanted to footnote that real quick. Still to be determined whether these new odds are having any impact, but it is the second straight year with them that some teams that were lower in the lottery made a pretty sizable leap, and maybe that's a deterrent to tanking. I don't know. We shall see. Anything else that leapt out last night before we get into the actual draft order here and start assigning players here?
The fact that some of these teams like Charlotte's no good. You know, they deserve a top three pick as much as the Knicks and anybody else. So I'm not going so crazy over the fact that the Knicks got screwed and a team like Charlotte lucked out. I mean, they're all in the same tier of bad. So I'm okay with these new flattening of the odds. And it's called the lottery because, you know, luck is involved.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going crazy over how it played out. But I do think that it did play out to make a pretty interesting draft order.
Which we'll get to in a second because I have one more tangent that I wanted to get to. I just remembered. I tweeted this last night, and I stand by this. The NBA should have just showed us the lottery ball draw for once, right? Like, they do tape it. You can find it on YouTube, folks, from past years. So for all the conspiracy theorists, it's there and everything. But, like, I've been in the room. It's fun to see it unfold. It's interesting. It has its own weird drama watching the balls pop up, and then you're trying to find these four number combinations, 1 through 1001. It's great theater on its own, and they stuck with the usual approach last night, but without people on a dais sitting there near Mark Tatum, without the ability to immediately check in with each of them, and what did they bring, a lucky rabbit's foot or their grandma's homemade pie or whatever. Like, we missed all the fun of the studio show anyway. So as long as you're going to have a stilted studio show because of the pandemic, just show us the lottery draw. And have everybody up. Zach Lowe wrote that they could have had them on Zoom windows watching the draw. Like, that would have been fun. Watch them all tensing up as they're scrambling, looking at their numbers on the little code sheet and all that. Anyway,
there's nothing more painful than pre-lottery interviews. You know, these guys, as if like they can affect the outcome, and they're like, you know, they're preparing a certain way. Right. Just like, get it over with already.
Right. And nobody can ever say who they're going to pick or what. We'll take the best available. I mean, it's all silly, but like, there's levels of silly. I thought it would have been fun to watch the draw itself for once. Oh, well. Yeah. All right. So with the number one overall pick, the Minnesota Timberwolves should. So this is Gerson Rosas. I'm going to do this again. I'm going to make you all the GMs. I think I did that last year. So you are Gerson Rosas, and you've got D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns, who played together for, I think, 3.2 seconds. And you are still trying, and you've turned over almost the entire roster. And now you've got the number one overall pick in a weird draft. What are you doing?
So I've had LaMelo Ball at number one the whole year, and I think the Timberwolves are in a spot where they still don't really know what they had. Like you said, they played together for 3.2 seconds. So they don't even know what Towns plus Russell plus the other guys, if that's going to translate to winning. This is still all about getting the best player available, stockpiling talent, and figuring out how to sort it out later in time. First mock draft, I haven't taken Anthony Edwards. And that's just based off pure speculation, the fact that they went out and got Russell. I figured they want him to have the ball in his hands. And Edwards, on paper, is the better match. I mean, he is 6'5", 225, explosive wing, a scoring wing. And Russell is the guy who has the ball and is more well-rounded with his passing. And so together on paper, you have Russell, the passer and the shooter, and then just the killer scorer in Edwards at the two. And then you worry about LaMelo, you know, can LaMelo play off the ball? Like, does it even make sense to draft LaMelo if you're going to put him off the ball? Because LaMelo's strengths are give him the ball and let him create, let him dance, and let him set the table. But at the same time, I'm still in the camp of you got to just get the best player and figure it out, even if it means trading Russell later on. So I don't know what they're going to do. It's one of those interesting teams to win the lottery where it's like, well, both of those guys have a case. Yeah. And I was kind of hoping, as somebody who tries to predict the draft, that wouldn't happen. Like, if the Chicago, I was like hoping like the Bulls would get the first pick, and they could be like, "Oh, easy, LaMelo," you know, because he fits a need for that team. But you can make a case for both guys, both in terms of best player available and fit. I think on paper, Edwards is the better fit, but I still have LaMelo Ball, the better player in a vacuum.
I like the way you broke it down, and I agree, which is that if you're a team that is essentially still rebuilding, and I hate to say that, you know, they've had Karl Anthony Towns there for years now, and once you've got a franchise cornerstone, you should be somewhere beyond using the R word, but they are, and they've got this new front office that's been in place for over, you know, for just a little over a year. And yeah, when you don't have enough talent, just get the best talent. And as, you know, look, D'Angelo Russell has made an all-star team, yes, but can you, you know, say confidently, all right, this is our guy for the next 5 to 10 years? He's gonna, no, like he's kind of up and down. He's still a little bit of a volatile commodity in a lot of ways. And if you think LaMelo Ball at 6'7" with ball handling skills and all the upside and is younger, has the ability to, a few years from now, be a much better guy to run your offense and, you know, be the tag team partner of Karl-Anthony Towns, then I think you get him. I don't think you can't go for fit when you have that many holes or when you don't necessarily have superstar level talent. And I also think this, and tell me if you disagree, I think there's nothing better than having multiple ball handlers. Like, I know that some guys are like good only with the ball in their hands, and now you start to create some difficulties. But the more guys who can make plays, the better off you are. And because he's 6'7", sure, that's awesome at point guard because of the size, but it means he also can play at least three positions, in which case you've got a lot of plug and play abilities with not with just D'Angelo Russell, but with other guys on your roster. So, and D'Angelo has played with other guards. He's played in two guard backcourts for stretches, both obviously Golden State and with the Nets. I don't know. If he's the best talent, and in your mind he is, then I think that's you have to go that way.
Yeah. So the thing is, so you take Ball, and like you said, Russell can play off the ball. He's had experience playing some two guard. I think if they take LaMelo, like, you have to make him the primary ball handler. And I don't know if Russell would be – I bet you Russell would not love that idea, that a rookie would come in and kind of take his primary touches. I just think it doesn't – even though both of those guys are kind of versatile and they can play off the ball, I'm picturing LaMelo kind of standing around in the wing. Like, he's not a good spot-up shooter. His game is all about having the ball in his hands for the majority of the game and getting into a rhythm and flow and creating and pick and rolls. And if you're going to take him to play him off the ball – you're playing him away from his strengths. So that's my only fear with that. But I still take, I'm going to go back to it. You still take LaMelo Ball because I think he's the best player and potentially a better long-term prospect than D'Angelo Russell. Like, it's possible that LaMelo Ball in 3 years is a better player than D'Angelo Russell, and then, you know, Russell becomes more expendable. So at the same time, we're talking about talent, but I think if you do take LaMelo Ball, Russell has to be on board, and he really has to adapt and become a little more flexible in his role in the offense, because – it's really kind of pointless to put LaMelo Ball on the wing, just kind of standing there and cutting. That's not his game.
Yeah, no, understood on that one for sure. And there's probably no case to make for anybody else here, right? Like, you're not drafting Wiseman because you've got Karl-Anthony Towns. And I mean, is there, I know that those are the three guys everyone has focused on the most, but in a draft that most people agree does not have any surefire stars, is there a modest reach to the next tier of guys? Is there somebody that fascinates you that you thought, well, if you're being really ambitious and adventurous, and if you're really confident in your scouting, you go who?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that. But I do. But I
that
do
player
think
does not exist, I guess.
No, he does not exist. But there is a trade down possibility. I mean, you
sure
trade down a couple spots, and Denny Avdija from Israel, who, you know, I think it's hard to justify taking him number one overall, just because it's hard to picture an all-star ceiling. And you can picture that with LaMelo or Edwards. But trade down a couple spots, get another asset, and Avdija, like, fits, I don't want to say perfectly, but he's a damn good fit in that lineup at the 3-4 spot between Russell and between Towns, with his versatility, well-rounded guy, checks a lot of boxes, competitive. Isaac Okoro is another guy who just kind of fits what they need. Like, they have these flashy offensive players. Okoro is toughness and grit and will guard your best player and doesn't need to take a shot, and he could still be happy, like a low maintenance type of guy, kind of perfect for what they need. So those are a couple of trade down options. Devin Bissell, if you want to trade down a couple of spots further, you know, depending on what the other asset is that they would get back, would determine how much it's worth going down for. But there are a couple guys in this draft outside the top three who are really good fits with Minnesota, but you got to have some balls to really take him at number one.
Yeah. And not ping pong balls, to be clear. sorry, I could not let that go. All right, let's assume that they go the best talent route and they draft LaMelo Ball. They figure it all out. So next up is the Warriors at number two. That rare, you know, set of events where a team that's a recent champion and has all, you know, has its core stars coming back and should jump right back into contention, nevertheless, is near the top of the draft, which is unusual, but it's not going to cause as many ripples, I think, or as much angst across the league because of the fact that there is no obvious, you know, star for them to grab and add to their core. Let's put the trading the pick to the side for a second. Let's just assume the Warriors are on the board. They have found no good trade, and they've resigned themselves to the fact that, all right, we're taking one of these guys, and he's playing for us. Who's the best fit now that LaMelo's off the board?
I'm going Anthony Edwards. And I actually think LaMelo would be a great fit for them, but we're going to say that LaMelo's gone.
Sure.
So Edwards, to me, is a plug-and-play scoring, you know, right away. And you put him in a Golden State team. But let's address his weaknesses first. The problem with Edwards that everyone has is shot selection. He's always, you know, he's always had the ball in his hands, and he could dribble 20 straight seconds and pull up from 30 feet. He won't have that freedom to do that in Golden State. He certainly won't have it with Draymond Green, you know, on his back. So going to Golden State would really discourage him from getting into those bad habits. Like, he wouldn't even have the opportunity to go into those bad habits. So I think it would bring out the best of him. And I think based on the way Golden State plays, you know, you could play Edwards, again, 6'5", 225. You could play him at the 2. You could play him at the 3. You could move Clay to the – they're all interchangeable. And again, he's a shot maker. Like, even if you don't put the ball in his hands, he could just make shots and get out in transition and finish above the rim. And so I just think he's a guy you can put in right away, and he's going to make shots. He's going to get you easy baskets. Wiseman is obviously the name who fits best on paper. Personally, I have a hard time justifying using the number 2 overall pick on a guy who's going to be the 5th option in your offense, who's also pretty unproven. I mean, three NCAA games. I feel like if you're Golden State, you could just get like Willie Cauley-Stein to go run the floor and catch and dunk. I mean, that's what Wiseman does. Yeah, maybe long term he's got some more skill to his game, but not in the near future. Hmm. I mean, if you look at his highlights, yeah, you see him make a couple of mid-range shots. He had a fall away here and there. He'll take it the length of the floor, but that's not routine plays for him. And I think the whole hope of with Wiseman, if you're going to draft him that high, is that you hope that those flashes from high school turn into routine plays. But he's nowhere close to being able to execute those at the NBA level. Right away, he's going to come in as a dunker and a shot blocker. And I think if you're Golden State, you can get a cheap free agent to do that. And again, fifth option type guy, and he doesn't pass, he doesn't shoot. I just don't see him being such an attractive get for Golden State at number 2 overall. At least with Edwards, he fits kind of the system with his wing play and perimeter game. And so I would go Edwards there. I don't know if that's what they're going to do. I know you said put the trade aside. My guess is that they won't make that pick at number 2. But yeah, I would go Edwards.
We'll talk about the trade possibilities in a second. With Wiseman, because we've seen him so often tied to them, even before the lottery was actually happened, people thought, well, there's the obvious hole, right? You know, you've got your 1 through 4 pretty well set, and they've had a revolving door at center. And, you know, look, they like to play small and put Draymond Green there, but that requires having other guys now to backfill. But if you do start a traditional-ish big, you do need a guy in today's NBA who can step out and guard, and who can switch defensive assignments, everything else. Does Wiseman at least have that ability? Would you have any confidence in him being that guy?
No. I mean, not right now. And maybe, you know, he proves his conditioning and proves his defensive IQ. I think coming into the season, one of the things I was looking forward to most was seeing how much he's improved his defensive IQ. In high school, he's got a 7'6 wingspan. He blocks, you know, 5'7 kids. It's kind of a joke. We didn't really get to see him in pick and roll coverage, making reads. The one game, and Bob Myers was at that game when he played Oregon, the third game of the season, his final game, he picked up 2 quick fouls. And overall, I think it was a bad showing for him. I know he finished with a double-double in that game that Myers was there. But I think there were a couple plays where you saw him guarding around the perimeter, and Peyton Pritchard, who is 5'10 and can't jump, was just splashing threes over him, and he got beat off the dribble. He doesn't really have the quickest hips around the perimeter. I think the word switchability gets thrown around a little bit too easily. But Wiseman is not a guy you want guarding, you know, switching to a smaller player in space. Mm-hmm. And then even in rim protection, he blocks shots, but it doesn't necessarily translate to impact defense. Like, it's kind of like Mitchell Robinson. I know Mitchell's still young, but he's the type of guy who could get you 6 blocks, but he also gets you 6 fouls, and it doesn't always translate to impact defense. I'm still there with Wiseman. I'm not sold that he's an impact rim protector, even though he'll get you the shot blocking. And I'm certainly not buying him shooting right now, stretching the floor. Yeah, he can make those like around the key shots, you know, kind of the way DeAndre Ayton did, but I don't think he's anywhere near DeAndre Ayton's skill level coming out of college. He can make them. He's got some nice touch. But he had a couple opportunities in that Oregon game again. And, like, he panicked. He jumped, he went up and down. He spun away for a fall away when there was nobody guarding him. I just don't think he's comfortable enough to be a guy who you can count on to make mid-range shots or even to make decisions with the ball. That's why I think right now he's pretty much just a roll to the basket, you know, react, dunk, run the floor, put back misses. That's really his job in the near future. And also, you put him on Golden State, he's not going to have many reps in the post. You know, it's not like they're going to feed him and say, okay, let's work on your post game. Let's work on your jump shot. There are other guys who are going to get those touches for a win-now team. It's not the best place to really work on your game.
Yeah. And as you say that, I think this underscores what will be the greater discussion anyway, which is if drafting guys, and this is just the case most drafts anyway with most players, and it's certainly the case with the guys that you're talking about, if they need some work, if they need some development, as most of these guys do when they come out, then being on a contending team is not the place to be unless that team already has enough depth to say, you're going to wait your turn. You're going to have a slight role in the rotation. You're going to be like the ninth or 10th man. You may not even play some games. Like, okay, you know, one, not doesn't make for a happy high lottery pick, but you can withstand that. But two, the Warriors are actually in the other position where on the one hand, they've got contending type top end talent, but they don't have sufficient supporting cast around them. And so they need to supplement. They need to restock. And we were seeing that even last year before everybody got hurt, that they just, you know, the cast had gotten older. And so they have holes to fill in this rotation. And I just don't think that, you know, you got to start looking at the ages. Steph is 32. Draymond and Clay are both 30. We know, obviously, Clay's coming off a major knee injury. And Draymond, it's been hard to tell the last couple of years. Is he slipping a little? Is it just a matter of locking in at times? Is it so? Their window is what it is. It's a couple more years, and you don't have any time to wait for any young guy to develop. So I think absolutely the only way that this pick is made by them and still on their roster on opening night is if they fail to find the right deal, which is altogether possible. But ideally you are taking this pick plus. Maybe it's the Andre Iguodala trade exception that they're still sitting on. I think it's like $17 million or something. You package those together, or maybe it's Andrew Wiggins and the pick. Maybe it's the pick and the Minnesota pick that you're getting next year from the Wiggins deal. But I do think you're trying to find that mid-tier veteran, you know, probably a wing. Because you just need, you know, you need to fill in around the edges still. I don't know who that guy is right now. Who knows what the trade market's going to look like. I have to believe that there's a deal to be made out there for a team that does not need, you know, somebody I was listening to, I'm trying to remember who's might have been Sam Vecenie speaking with Jeff Goodman on his podcast, I think suggested Aaron Gordon, and apologies if I'm remembering incorrectly or if I'm attributing to the wrong voice on the pod because it was a three-way discussion. But like an Aaron Gordon type, he's been discussed with the Warriors or tied to them before. That kind of makes sense. And the Magic need to figure out a new direction. I think there's a deal out there somewhere.
Yeah. And honestly, another trade down possibility. I bet you there are going to be teams calling them, you know, like Chicago at 4. They're probably going to want LaMelo Ball. And if Edwards goes first, I mean, and same thing with Golden State. There's with Minnesota, they're better fits, even though they're not the best player available. Dia and Okoro, those are, and Devin Vassell. Those are better fits, guys who are lower maintenance guys who can play off talent and give them what they need with shooting, passing, you know, the jack of all trades, Swiss Army knife type players.
Yeah, I have, as I say, no doubt in my mind, Bob Myers is going to be working the phones hard trying to move off this pick and find a way to get some veteran talent, because veteran talent is what wins you championships, not rookies. And it's nice to, you know, look, it's nice the idea to say, well, let's get a young, you know, future star. So as this group ages, we've got somebody else to kind of take on that role or to become the bridge to the next era of the Warrior. That's fine in concept, but not if that level of talent doesn't exist there.
Right. So let's also explore the idea of if Edwards goes first. So I'm big on LaMelo to Golden State. And like you said, Curry is what, 35?
32.
32, but he'll... 3 years when it's like LaMelo extension right. Time. I mean, he's right there waiting. And for the next couple of years, maybe play Curry off the ball a little bit, take some pressure and stress off his knees trying to blow by guys. And just, I mean, think the thought of playing LaMelo with Clay on his left and Steph on his right, I think it's going to make him a better point guard. I think it'll help Steph maybe get some extra years on him playing off the ball and doing more running off screens than trying to grind it down the paint. And so I don't know. And it's obviously the good culture and another good maturing opportunity for LaMelo.
Yeah. No, the temptation, if he's on the board still, if Minnesota took Edwards and LaMelo were there, I mean, there would be a temptation. I just think that Can you picture a scenario where LaMelo Ball is a critical player, a starter on a contending team next, I was going to say May or June, but I don't know. I don't know when the playoffs, conference finals, finals, or anything else are. But whenever that is, can you picture LaMelo Ball that soon being a reliable major cog on a contending team?
Well, if you tell him to play to his strengths, like his strengths are passing. Just move the ball, find the open guy, and play away from your weaknesses, which is kind of, you know, pulling up off a couple of step backs and get him out of that style of game. And just, you know, getting to buy in and focus on pushing the pace, finding open teammates, setting the table. I mean, that's his bread and butter. I mean, that's what he's so good at. And as long as you can get him away from taking the bad shots, and you know, he had such a heavy workload in Australia, he had to take some of those bad shots, but he wouldn't have to do that in Golden State. Again, play to his strengths. I think they can find a way to make it work if he's able to buy in to maybe not putting up big stats early in his career.
Yeah. Okay, so LaMelo to the team, the T-Wolves, and then Anthony Edwards to the Warriors. And so then next up, Michael Jordan's Charlotte Hornets at third, having leapt up from eighth, and their reward is?
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing they would go Wiseman. They need talent. And he's not top three on my board. I've talked to scouts who do believe he's that good. And again, this is a draft where there's not many obvious answers. So I think they would play it safe here if LaMelo and Edwards are gone. Wiseman fits in terms of best player available potentially with his 7'1", 240 frame, 7'6 wingspan, athleticism, the potential for those flashes of skill to turn into more regular occurrences. And obviously they need a center and a defensive presence next to P.J. Washington, who's a good offensive player, but I think he needs a rim protector next to him. And if you're buying into his tools, Wiseman, and his development, he's got the chance to be a very disruptive rim protector.
This is a team with no discernible identity, which is, of course, the problem with most bad teams. And some of them have an identity. Like, you know, Minnesota Timberwolves, for better or worse, your identity is Karl Anthony Towns. So you can be bad and somewhat have an identity in terms of a player or a style or just a picture forming. The Hornets, after, you know, year after year, I mean, at least, you know, look, Kemba Walker was their identity for all intents and purposes and was a great ambassador for them. But, you know, they weren't a winning team. In the post-Kemba world, I don't know what this team is about or who they're about right now. And, you know, if Wiseman at least can, you know, be a finisher for Devonte Graham and Terry Rozier, I mean, you can at least start to see a picture forming of like a logical offensive approach there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like Graham. I think Devonte Graham's a good player. You know, he's not the guy who's going to turn it around for them. I don't know if Wiseman is either. I think, like we said before, they're still in just stockpile asset mode. And Wiseman technically has, you know, theoretical upside. And they're still in best player available mode. It sounds to me like that there are enough teams out there, and I don't know what Charlotte's thinking, that he is the guy with the most upside left on the board. And so whether he's center or not, it's probably the direction they would go.
Yeah. I like the idea that maybe LaMelo falls to them. Maybe there's no chance whatsoever of that happening, because if LaMelo doesn't get taken number one, the Warriors probably grab him number two, whether for themselves or somebody else, right? Because that's probably the most tradable version of the number two pick.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like it. I do like the idea of the LeVar versus Michael Jordan showdown. If LaMelo somehow ends up in Charlotte, I also think that there's something to be said for, like we saw, I think it was that much harder for Lonzo, not just, obviously LA was home and that region was home, but being in that spotlight, I just think is really tough. And so being in a place like Charlotte for LaMelo and being able to grow into stardom on a team without a searing spotlight, and whatever value that you might actually get from having Jordan pop into the gym now and then, I just think it would be really interesting if LeVar didn't decide to like stir the usual shit that he stirs up and start talking smack about Michael, or start talking shit the second that LaMelo didn't get enough reps or opportunity or the ball down the street or whatever. I mean, we haven't heard from LeVar a lot in the last, you know, year or so. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that time has passed.
I don't mind that. I kind of like the idea of LaMelo in Charlotte. And first of all, Charlotte has these pieces who really need a guy to get them the ball in good spots. Yeah. And that's like, that's LaMelo's thing. That's what he does. And he'd have plenty of freedom. He'd have Devontae Graham, a shooter, next to him. Again, PJ, Miles Bridges, who's like got talent, but just needs somebody to kind of optimize it, get the most of it. And I think that's LaMelo.
So the Bulls jumped up to fourth from seventh. Again, these feel like hollow victories lottery-wise this year. And especially to this spot, because let's talk about whether this is what this draft is. It's been kind of framed, and you've done it too, as kind of a three-man draft, that when we're talking about those first few spots, it's those three names that have gotten the vast majority of the attention and analysis in all the mock drafts. Is it more complicated than that as we start to talk about the Bulls at four here? Does one of those guys potentially slip to them? And where is the line between the tiers in this draft?
There really isn't much of a line. It's top three because we think about this theoretical upside. And I think on paper, these guys have the highest ceiling. But I guarantee you the best three players in this draft are not going to be LaMelo, Edwards, and Wiseman. It's just not going to happen that way. And, you know, Wiseman, I have ranked number 10 on my board. I don't have him top three. And I know scouts who have him as late lottery. It sounds like more have him in the top five, and they're going to be willing to make that pick and chase the upside. But I don't think Wiseman's going to be a top three player in this draft. I just, based on the order, I don't think he slips because he kind of fits a need for some of these teams in the top three. But the difference between three and four and five and six and seven, there is no difference. And I think fit's going to play a big role for all of these guys. Yeah. And like I always say, like I want to redo my big board after the draft, because based on where these guys go, I might suddenly like them a little bit better. And so at number four for the Bulls, I have Denny Avdija. You can make a case that Obi Toppin should get consideration, or Tyrese Haliburton. All these guys are right in the same tier. But who can be optimized in Chicago's lineup? Who can get the most out of their potential? And who fits the best? I think Denny Avdija, who just had this nice run in July, and everybody was shut down. He actually got the play in Israel, was named MVP of the Israeli League. He's mature. He showed up looking like physically bulkier, 6'8", really competitive, high IQ guy, speaks perfect English, isn't going to have any problem transitioning to the United States, and just does a lot of everything. I think is a really good fit between Markkanen and Zach LaVine.
Yeah, so the Bulls are funny. I think, as you know, I have overrated them at least 2 years in a row, maybe longer. And they've got an opening at coach, and they've got a new GM or team president in Arturis Kornosovas. And so new front office, you know, we don't know what their philosophy is yet or how they want to structure this team. But before they even start tinkering, I look at, you know, a roster that, all right, look, a point guard, Kobe White / Tomas Satoransky / Chris Dunn, whoever. They've got some things to figure out, but between Zach LaVine, Otto Porter Jr., contract notwithstanding, Lowry Markkanen, and Wendell Carter, like there's talent here. They have not gotten the best out of the talent that they have, but they've done okay the last few years. There's some mistakes along the way. I don't need to get into all that, but they're not devoid of talent. They should be better than they were. We'll see who the new coach is going to be. But I don't think this team is that far away from at least being competitive and respectable even before they make this pick.
I'll ask you, why aren't they winning?
I don't know.
Like this team is like got a lot of good players.
Yeah.
I know injuries. I mean, Wendell Carter's been hurt.
Yes.
Porter gets hurt. But every time I do like a mock draft and I'm picturing who the Chicago Bulls need, I'm like, they don't have any. They have good players at every position.
Yeah.
It's going to be totally best player available with them. Like you said, Porter is, he's got an opt-in to this last year.
I'll check while we're talking. So while I'm looking that up, you said Denny Avdija would be the good fit here. Given the guys that they have that we just talked about, tell me how he fits with a core of essentially, like their three best players, are LaVine, Markkanen, and Carter, right? And then, Otto Porter Jr.'s, the next you talk about. But like, how does he fit with those guys specifically in terms of how his skill set might complement them?
Right. So the offense in Chicago runs through LaVine and Markkanen and now Kobe White, who is like a flamethrower the last month of the season. These guys all have their identity is scoring. And I think Avdija, who played two different roles overseas, one in the Israeli league, he was a go-to guy, more of a go-to guy, but in Euroleague, much better competition. He was a spot-up guy, a role player, who really showed a willingness to complement the guys around him, right? And he's got this nice little complementary skill set, and he kind of reminds me of Gordon Hayward, where he's like the potential to be a star role player. You know, you don't really build your offense around Hayward. It's ideally you get Hayward to be like a third option in your offense, fourth option. And he doesn't have to score to be effective. He can make outside shots. He can run pick and roll and pass. He gets out in transition. He defends with good IQ. He's just a good all-around, well-rounded player. And somebody who doesn't need the ball. I mean, he doesn't get frustrated if he doesn't get the touches. He really does show good patience and willingness to let the game come to him and make the right decisions. And I think with guys like Markkanen and Levine and Kobe White, who can be shot hunters, he's a nice, again, I've used this word a couple times, a nice low-maintenance player who does the little things. And then suddenly you look at the box score, and, you know, he's got four assists, and he's got eight rebounds, he's got a couple threes. He just does a little bit here and there. He may never be a 20-point scorer in the league, but I don't think that's what Chicago needs.
So he does a little bit of everything. He sounds like another version of Tomas Satoransky.
I think a little higher upside.
Yeah.
I mean, the big question with Danny is, like, everybody likes him. Nobody loves him. There's nothing – he doesn't have this one special signature skill. You know, he's not a super athlete. He doesn't take over games, but he's good at everything. And he's 6'8", and he's strong, and he competes, and he has a good head on his shoulders. And he's just somebody you can really bank on being a pro from day one till year 10.
Otto Porter Jr., by the way, player option, 28.5-ish million for this season. So this is the last year of that massive contract. Yeah. So they also will have room, you know, or they were potentially going forward, they're going to need to slot in somebody else at small forward. Although, like, is Otto Porter a small forward, a power forward in today's game? Whatever. But yeah, last season of his deal.
Yeah, so it would make sense to get a guy like Evdia, probably.
Yeah. All right, so Cleveland was one of those teams that was in the top three with the 14% chance of winning it. They dropped to fifth. Again, not a catastrophic drop, it seems like, in this draft, although from second to fifth is a little bit more of a deal. And there goes the city workers chopping up the streets. How badly can you hear that on your end?
I can hear it.
Oh God, this
sounds like a lawnmower.
All right, my apology. Yeah, my apology to the listeners as we literally grind through this, or we grind through the talking part, and the workers will grind through grinding down the street outside my Carroll Gardens apartment. The question for Jonathan and I before we started this was who was going to get interrupted first, me by the people chopping up the street or Johnny Wasp by his 2 month old. So
yeah, whoever had 1:09 p.m. free drinks tonight.
Let's hope this goes by quickly and is not too annoying for the listeners. All right, Cleveland, another team that I would say kind of lacking an identity. That's what happens when LeBron James leaves you, I guess. They need a franchise star, and I don't suppose they're going to be getting one at fifth. But who can they get to make Cavs fans feel a little bit better?
So I'm going with Obi Toppin here, and Cleveland is in such a weird spot where, like, they were rebuilding, and then suddenly they're trying to compete by trading for Drummond. They're kind of in the middle of nowhere. It seems like they can't make up their mind. Like you said, there is no real identity in Cleveland. Like, what are they trying to do here? I don't think Drummond is a guy who's going to move the needle for them anytime soon. They're on different timelines than Darius Garland. They don't know if Darius Garland is their star point guard of the future. Cleveland should just be thinking best player available. Forget about they have a hole at small forward. They just need, like, a good player. And I think Obi Toppin is, for me, the best player available. I think Colby Altman's probably got to have some pressure on him. He's got to get a player that gives them pretty quick results. I don't think he can afford another project who might take a couple years. So to me, Obi makes sense as the best player available. He makes sense as a guy who can come in right away, give them offense, give them easy buckets. And honestly, if Kevin Love ever became, you know, tradable, if they ever thought about it, it would make it a little bit easier to get rid of him, because Obi would step into power forward, and I think he would step in pretty quickly.
Tell me about his overall skill set, and how does he fit with that seemingly kind of awkward Garland-Sexton backcourt?
Yeah, I mean, he's a scorer. The big question, of course, is defense, but I don't think you can really nitpick. He's a guy who I think teams feel good about his offense translating. Averaged 20 points on 60% shooting. Led the nation in dunks, explosive 6'9". But this year, why he's top five is because he really improved his skill level. Shot 39% from three. Really nice flashes of passing. I know two assists per game isn't a big deal, but if you looked at the passes, the eye test says that, you know, he knows how to find teammates. A couple of nice, he's got a post up. He's just a, between the athleticism, the explosiveness, and this skill of now being able to stretch the floor, he kind of reminds me of John Collins. The big question is, how much are his defensive limitations going to cast a cloud over his offensive production? And again, I think you're nitpicking if you're putting too much stock into his defensive outlook. He's going to be a guy who's going to produce. He's going to shoot a high percentage. And I think he's a long-term starter in this league. And of course, Cleveland, now that they have Drummond and Love, you know, the only real hole in their starting lineup is that small forward spot. But I don't think whoever they drafted at small forward was going to move the needle. They got to take the best player available. To me, that's Obi Toppin.
So I mentioned Garland and Sexton. Those are their last two lottery picks, Garland at fifth last year and Sexton at eighth in 2018. They've not drafted well in general here. And, you know, Wiggins, of course, was originally their pick, sending him to Minnesota for Love. And then before that, you know, obviously Anthony Bennett won overall. Deion Waiters was, I think, what, fourth back in 2012. Like, they haven't really made a good pick in the lottery since Kyrie Irving in 2011. And some of that, of course, they were out of the lottery for a little bit with LeBron back. But Garland and Sexton, like, where do you think they are with this backcourt? Like, is this a you know, duo that can actually grow together and make sense? Or is this ultimately where they're going to have to pick one or the other, or either for that matter?
I think you can make it work if you kind of slide like Sexton into a six man role. But, you know, when they drafted Garland, you know, I scratched my head. These guys are, I guess the label I give them, they're scoring ball handlers. I know technically they're point guards on the depth chart, or I guess Sexton plays too, but these are guys who handle the ball and they score. And of course, if you handle the ball long enough, you're going to get some assists.
Yes.
But it doesn't make sense together. Neither of, you know, defensively, they're vulnerable. Offensively, they don't. Neither of them really have a reputation for making guys better. It doesn't really make sense in terms of like getting the most out of the other three guys on the roster. I'm sure they could put up points. I mean, they'll put pressure on defenses, but it's not really a formula for long-term success and wins. Garland's a good player. Garland's a shot maker and somebody I view to be in the league for a long time. But I guess when they drafted Garland, they pictured like a full package, well-rounded, you know, Damian Lillard type who scores, who passes. I don't think the passing is real in terms of impact, playmaking, and getting guys better. His bread and butter is knocking down shots, pull-ups, step-backs, and neither of those two guys are just really all about setting the table for teammates and making them better.
Yeah, that's a problem. Maybe they could use LaMelo, find a way to move up. I don't like anything the Cavs have done the last couple of years. I'm sorry, including the Drummond acquisition. Like, I don't even know what that's about. What did that do for you? How have you moved further along? What is it? I'm baffled. They're just treading water. The team that got Drummond from Detroit at
Atlanta.
Nope, Atlanta. You're right. Atlanta at sixth. I'm getting ahead of myself. Detroit at seventh. Atlanta at sixth. This team, my God. In jotting everything down, just notes about this team, I was like, it's shocking to remind yourself how young these guys really are, and especially because when you look at the recent drafts, you're like, oh yeah, Reddish, he's starting for them, you know, toward the end of the season, he was starting, you know, 2019 draft, him and DeAndre Hunter both starting, 2018, Trey, 2018 also Herter, Collins in 2017. Oh my God, their entire starting lineup was just drafted 5 minutes ago. It's insane. And then Clint Capella, who you know, once healthy, we'll see how he fits with this group. They're so freaking intriguing, and everybody got way ahead of themselves before last season saying, this is the year that they're going to make the big leap. I'm high on them, but I was not on that particular bandwagon. I did not think they were going to be challenging for the eighth seed immediately. Although I think some of those rumblings were because I think ownership there might have had some expectations. They might need a little bit more patience. I often write this down, needs patience. I put it right next to the Hawks. Okay, but they're drafting sixth to a team that already has an entire classroom of kids. Is there a viable or logical fit here, or should they be looking to flip this pick for veteran help because they really need to start, you know, moving forward with this group?
So I've kind of been talking about Tyrese Haliburton all season as like the perfect fit for Atlanta. He isn't my best player available, but his fit is so good. My best player available would be Okongwu from USC. You know, Atlanta just signed Capella or traded for Capella. He's going to be there for a couple of years. At least that's what his contract says. But Haliburton, to me, stands out as such a good fit for this team. And Trae Young led the NBA in time of possession. Obviously, they're so reliant on him to generate offense. And Haliburton, to me, is just such a perfect complement to him in the backcourt. As a secondary playmaker, like a really, really high IQ passer, averaged 6.5 assists this year at Iowa State, and that was with teammates shooting 22% on his pick-and-roll passes to spot-up guys. Like, his team was not very good, and he still was a really, really high assist guy. And just somebody, you know, I compare him to Lonzo Ball. He doesn't need to be super fast to be a playmaker. He just has such good passing IQ. So you put him next to Trey to take some pressure off, but he also ranked in the 99th percentile as a spot-up player. He shot 49% on catch-and-shoot jumpers. So to me, I think he can complement Trey. He can back up Trey. And he's just a really mature, high IQ guy. I think they could use some maturity in that lineup. And I know he's a rookie, but that's not the way he comes off when he plays. And if you ever interview him, he's just like super likable and you know, way ahead of his time in terms of, you know, he's 20 years old. He doesn't seem like it. He's like a veteran. He's going to be like a veteran rookie. And I just think he makes a lot of sense for a young team.
That's a great point, actually, that we often just immediately ascribe certain characteristics to a guy just because he's a rookie. But yeah, the rookies come in all, you know, forms in terms of maturity as well as skill set. And you know, your presence can be beyond your years. So, yeah, I mean, look, as long as they're taking a patient route, which I'm not sure if they are, another rookie, another young guy-ish is fine. How are you feeling about their development so far? Injuries have obviously played a big role in this team not quite getting to advance quite as far as they'd like to in the standings. But where are you on Trae Young a couple years in?
I mean, he's good. to be averaging, I know that the stats aren't necessarily reflective of impact and defense is a problem, but you're averaging 30 and 10. I mean, you're one of the best scorers and offensive players in the league. And, you know, I was high on him coming into the draft. I bought in. I think he's just so special with the ball in his hands. So I'm fine with what he's done. I think he's surpassed expectations for me, regardless of all the flaws. And then you look at the other guys. I was not a big fan of the DeAndre Hunter pick. He was, I think, 13 on my board. They traded up to get him at fourth. I think Hunter's a nice player. He's going to last a long time in this league. I think he's a good role player. And I think they reached a little bit on him. I had Cam Reddish ranked better than Hunter, and I probably still do. I like what Reddish did, even though it took him a while to get going. He's just a guy who needs his confidence to grow a little bit. And you saw at the end of the season what he was able to do. So I feel good about Reddish. I was a little disappointed that Kevin Huerter didn't take a step forward. But I still have faith in his shooting, and I think he's a high IQ passer, IQ team defender. And John Collins, you know, he keeps getting better. Again, I didn't watch enough of him defensively to really have like a confident take on how bad he was and how much it really affected his value, because I know he's like a 2010 guy, and he shoots a high percentage, and he's pretty much an every night consistent producer. I think the question with Collins is, like, is he a guy you want to pay long term? Can you win with him? As you're paying him a lot of money. And it'll be interesting to see if Capella kind of helps mask some of Collins' defensive limitations. I mean, I don't think Capella played at all for Atlanta.
No.
So they have, on paper, it makes sense. It may take, some patience. They have some nice pieces. They're still a couple more pieces away. But they have some good young players, and I think they have, you know, a superstar in Trey.
And they're a blast to watch, even when they're not winning. They're just so much fun to watch. And I think they'll be that much more enjoyable next year. The only reason I asked about Trey, I mean, look, the numbers are what they are. The dude's a stud. He's an incredible shooter. He's a phenomenal passer, and the shooting sometimes overshadows the passing. But, you know, there's those, you know, rumblings around the league about whether or not his teammates like playing with him and whether he holds the ball too much and whether he's manipulating everything to either get the shot or the assist and whether he's a little bit, a little bit of a stat chaser in that regard. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's still young and those are things you can grow out of, too. I haven't heard anybody question his character, just a little bit more of habits. And those things can be separate things sometimes. All right. Now we get to Detroit at seventh. And, yeah. Here's another team that I don't know who this team is. I mean, it's as long as Blake Griffin is there, I guess they're about Blake Griffin. He's 31 with all the injuries, obviously, in his history. 2 years left at almost 36 plus million and then 30, almost 39 million. So I don't think he's going anywhere, but they got to figure out a way to transition into something and somebody else somewhere along the way here. Again, new administration with Troy Weaver now running the front office. They need pretty much everything, I would say, with all due respect to Derrick Rose. Where do you see them going?
They should walk into this draft with a list of seven players, and whoever the seventh guy is, they take him. I mean, this is a blank canvas roster. There's no need to overthink anything with fit or needs. Whoever the best guy is, even if he plays power forward. To me, based on our little mock draft here, Onyeka Okongwu is the best player available. He happens to be a nice fit, I think, with Blake as a rim protector, athleticism around the basket. I actually have him ranked higher than James Wiseman. I think he's more skilled. I was at a high school game of his. He played Zion Williamson. He went for 36 and 14, and that obviously stuck in my mind. And then he just was so good this year at USC. I really don't have any questions. I mean, I think there are some questions about his upside, and some scouts wonder if he's a little bit outdated as more of a post player. But I think that's okay to be a post player if you're really good in the post. And he is very skilled in the post. He's a guy, give him the ball, he can create a high percentage shot for himself with either hand. Like I said, shot blocker, rim protector, big-time athlete. I think just a really high-floor guy. I think the comparison I've heard around the league has been Derek Favors. You know, nothing super sexy, but somebody you can bank on for the next 5 years and gives you something at both ends of the floor.
Yeah. Their recent draft history, obviously under a different administration, or a couple different administrations, apparently, I should say, because they've shifted gears multiple times in the last 4 or 5 years. Recent draft history, not great. Sekou Doumbouya, Luke Kennard, Henry Ellenson, Stanley Johnson back in 2015. They've not gotten a lot of bang for the buck. But they do have Christian Wood. So, like, there's a discovery there somewhere. But, yeah, the draft record is rough. But this will be Troy Weaver's first time running a front office himself. But he comes from, obviously, a phenomenal organization in Oklahoma City. It's too early probably to get a sense of what that might mean for them. But I'll be interested. I'll be interested to see how that goes.
Yeah, I like Weaver. I think that was obviously a good hire, but he's got like so little to work with there. Like you said, you just rattled off those draft picks. I mean, not too much to be excited about. I mean, Sekou has had some nice flashes before he hit a wall like 10 games in. I don't know. Kennard's a good player. Christian Wood's going to be a free agent. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody throws like a lot of money at him. I don't know if it's going to be worth bringing him back, but yeah, they're at the bottom. Even though they didn't have the worst record, it seems like they're in that tier of a team who is just at the bottom.
Yeah. God, even just looking at the lineup, Christian Wood, who again, developed under their watch and, you know, credit to them, but you know, Tony Snell, Derrick Rose, Langston Galloway, Blake, it's just such a mishmash. There's a lot of work to do there. All right. We have reached the pinnacle of this discussion because you and I both reside in New York, so everything is amplified when it comes to the Knicks. And again, another team with a new administration. My gosh, this is quite a theme here. We've got at least, what, three new front offices in the lottery? Yeah. Chicago, Detroit, New York. Leon Rose making his first pick, whenever this first pick will come, at eighth overall. Obviously, Knicks fans would have loved to get LaMelo Ball, as we discussed earlier. Obviously, Knicks fans would love to win a lottery or move up ever, because it just doesn't happen. What can they do for themselves at eighth for a roster that needs a ton?
Well, it'll be interesting to see if they make any attempt to move up for LaMelo, and I'm guessing the guy that they would offer or would have to offer would be Mitchell Robinson to Golden State, say. You know, I don't know if they'd be willing to do that. You know, we know what Mitchell Robinson is. We still don't really know what LaMelo is, and the Knicks need something that they, you know, they know what they have. But anyway, they could look to move up. I'm guessing that doesn't work out that way. At eight, they have a bunch of options. And, of course, everyone's going to be thinking point guard. If Halliburton's off the board and LaMelo's off the board, the next guy who comes to mind is Killian Hayes, the French point guard who played in Germany. But my guess is they don't take him. I think that Leon Rose and Perry, I think they're going to hesitate to take a 19-year-old point guard who struggles to shoot and pair him with RJ Barrett, whose weakness is shooting, and pair him with Mitchell Robinson, who doesn't shoot. and to build around three players, and none of them are good shooters, I just don't see them going that direction. And not to say that the Frank Ntilikina pick would kind of dissuade them from taking another French point guard, but it might be in the back of their minds in terms of making the fan base happy. Like the average fan might say, oh, another French point guard. I mean, obviously that's not the right way to think about it.
Well, the pick's going to get booed regardless. And the good news is, since the draft cannot be done in person, they will not hear the boos.
Right, exactly.
Unless they do it like they do with the bubble games, and like Knicks fans can just, zoom in and be like little ghostly figures there at the draft just to uphold the tradition of Knicks fans booing their pick getting taken in New York at either the Barclays Center or the Garden. Like this is a tradition that should withstand. Like the NBA needs to figure this out. If you couldn't televise the lottery draw live, if you couldn't figure out some of these other things, at least give the Knicks fans their moment to boo whoever they draft on draft night. It's all they've got. Come on.
Yeah, something tells me like the head of Knicks Digital would have his finger on the mute button, right after that pick happened. But so
it's a tradition.
So Hayes is going to be the guy who gets talked about a lot because of his position. He's actually top five on my board, but it's really contingent on fit because there's not much of a difference to me between 3 and 10 in this draft. So the guy I've answered for the last couple months of who the Knicks should take if they don't move up is Devin Vassell from Florida State. That's who I have them taking in my mock draft. I think if they don't think that they have a star point guard on the board, they're not going to take a point guard just to take a point guard. And you look at Devin Vassell and he fits exactly kind of what they need, shooting and defense. He's the best 3-and-D player in this draft, 6'6", big-time athlete, over 40% from downtown in both years at Florida State, and easily one of the best defensive players in the draft, if not the best wing defender, team defender, just a really safe, high-floor pick, and the type of player that every team needs, particularly the Knicks. So Cole Anthony is going to get talked a lot about. And I'll say this, I'm sure they're going to give him a really hard look. Based on the guys I talked to around the league, he's really lost support. Like, they've jumped off the wagon. Hmm. If there's a team that didn't jump off the wagon, I wouldn't be surprised if it was the Knicks. But it's almost like the Knicks could trade 27 and 38 to try and move up to get Cole at like 20. Like, I think he's going to slip Cole. So anyway, I think they're going to play it safe with a guy like Vassell, who's not super flashy, may never make an all-star team, but his shooting and defense are kind of exactly what they need at that wing spot. And I just think he makes a lot of sense for them at number 8.
Yeah, and I know like there will be some people who will say, well, the Knicks don't need any more wings. They've got RJ Barrett and they've got Kevin Knox. The Knicks don't have anybody they can hang their hat on right now. So I would say that you can't even think about duplication. If the best available player at your spot at 8th was a center even, I would even go that way. Like Mitchell Robinson, we still don't know if what he does contributes to winning, because he hasn't been in a winning environment and he's still got some flaws a couple years in. I just don't think that the Knicks can afford to be picky. They arguably have the worst roster in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too exciting.
And that's not just me speaking. That's people around the league when I've asked about. They talk about two players. They say RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson. And nobody else even registers with other teams' scouts or GMs. They talk about those two guys, and even with those two guys, neither of them is a surefire anything. RJ Barrett, people aren't sure whether, he might just be a solid starter, and which would be fine, and have a nice long career, but there's no one guy that you say, well, because we have this guy, we're steering away from a certain position. You can't. Like, the Knicks just need, like a lot of the teams we've been discussing, Cleveland, Detroit, they just need talent, period. They need anybody that think that they can blossom into a solid player and especially a starter for them, because there's just not a lot to build on right now. They're absolutely rebuilding still.
Right.
I hate to say that, and it's one of the interesting reasons, or one of my interesting. God, I cannot speak all of a sudden. One of the interesting things I think about the hire of Thibodeau is that I think it sets a tone or an expectation of Tibbs is a winning coach who's more of a win now guy. He's established, and this is not a win now roster, but it is a 5-year deal. So maybe they've built into this the idea that they will develop under him and he's going to have a nice long run here to get this thing on track. But they're not ready to win now. They won't be ready to win whenever opening night of next season is, most likely. And it's going to take some time. So, whether it's the organization itself, which has done a terrible job of exercising patience, or the fans who have done a better job of being patient while the organization has not understood those cues, patience is still the operative word here.
Yeah, and you know, I think the thing with Vassell, like you said, they're looking for best player available. I think there's a whole mix of players who can have a case. But with Vassell, you could just bank on him being a key part of whatever your whatever the rebuild is going to be, whoever it's going to be with. To have a good 3-and-D wing, you know, you can't go wrong. And so that's why I kind of think they should make that pick. That's why I think right now, based on how our mock draft is playing out, that's who I would guess they would take.
Is there anybody now outside of the group we've talked about who is just kind of got your eye, that you're just totally intrigued by, who we're not necessarily going to see toward the top half of the lottery, but, you know, one of these other teams that is now in the back half of the lottery, you know, Phoenix, San Antonio, any of these teams, is somebody going to get some hidden gem in there? Who else has your eye?
So my pick is Patrick Williams, who's Devin Vassell's teammate. And, you know, he averaged 9 points and 4 rebounds. He really didn't have a big time role, but his particular game is so unique, and he wasn't able to really showcase it. The offense didn't run through him at all. He's 6'8", 225, totally jacked. And a guy with that type of size, you see him handling the ball in pick and roll situations, one-handed lefty passes, pull-up jumpers, step back into the mid-range, physical, powerful finisher, and potential defensive versatility with his strength and perimeter defense. He's also the youngest NCAA prospect in this draft. I think if you were to ask me who's the one guy, and I just honestly, this is what a scout said to me the other day, and I kind of agree. He said, if we're going to look back a couple years, you know, who's the one guy, like, you know, I can't believe he slipped that far, or how did we not see it at the time? My guess is Patrick Williams, who, again, 9 points a game. Teams may have a tough time taking him early. And I do know teams that have in top 10. I'm guessing that's in the minority. But if his flashes, again, turn into regular routine occurrences, then he's got one of the most unique potential trajectories as a power forward who handles and pick and rolls, who shoots threes, who can pull up, who could defend three spots and play within the offense. There's just so many different unique things that a guy his size can do. So again, he has to put it all together, and it won't happen next year. But it's one of those guys where we look back in 3 years and suddenly we were seeing like this really unique type of player. And from what I've heard, really hard worker, like high character, like the type of guy who's going to maximize his potential. So he's my answer for Patrick Williams, and somebody who also the Knicks should consider at number 8.
They're not digging up my street right now, and your baby's still not crying. So let's squeeze in one more before I let you go here. Every time we get a draft like this, where there's no Zion Williamson, there's no Anthony Davis, there's no clear cut number one at the top, even the group at the top that everybody's buzzing about, everybody's still kind of a little bit soft on or has concerns about. And so then we start doing this thing where it's like, it's a bad draft. But you can have a talent pool that is wide but not, or deep but not wide, whatever the damn analogy is, that there's a lot of good, solid talent and maybe a lot of guys who will become 10-year starters, but maybe not all stars or MVP types. So I don't want to conflate those things, but and just throw it to you here. How do you overall evaluate this draft as people start to figure out, like, good draft, bad draft, weird draft? And we know weird automatically because it's 2020 and everything is weird. But how do you feel about the overall talent?
So I think the best way to describe it is, you know, of course, the narrative right now is it's a weak draft. I think it's really more appropriate to say it's just harder to identify the best players. And, you know, you look at that 2013 draft when there was no consensus number one, right? Cleveland took Anthony Bennett, but then suddenly Victor Oladipo turned into a star, and CJ McCollum turned into a star, and Rudy Gobert turned into the Defensive Player of the Year, and Giannis turned into MVP, and Steven Adams turned into a $100 million center. We didn't see it beforehand, you know, and I think it's the same thing with this draft. There are guys who can, 5 years from now, surprise. We just can't identify who they're going to be right now, and nobody has a real, you know, high confidence level. You know, Devin Vassell, who I've been talking about a lot, like, he could easily turn into Chris Middleton. I mean, it's the same type of player. So I'm not ready to say this is a weak draft. I'm just on board with saying it's tougher to pick out who the best players are going to be and who the stars are going to be. There's going to be all stars from this draft. I don't know who they're going to be, but I would bet money that we'll see more than one all-star from this draft, and they may not be in the top 10.
Did the fact that we had the shutdown and no combine and no anything, no workouts, no this might be a whole other discussion that I shouldn't be throwing in minute 106, but do you think it messed with the overall evaluation process at all? Can you feel any tangible impact on the way you and teams are evaluating this class right now?
I think it hurts some prospects, and I think it's going to result in sleepers and steals. Guys like there's some European guys who really rely on workouts to get face time and play in front of executives who didn't really get to see them live, and they're not going to get that chance. And suddenly they're going to be there later in the draft because nobody's going to be willing to use a lottery pick on Alex Pokuševski, who played 12 games in Greece's second league, didn't work out for anybody, yet he's 7 foot, shoots threes, terrific passer, shot blocker. Like, he could be one of the top five players in this draft, but he's not going to go that high because he didn't really get the opportunity to work out for teams. And I think that's kind of the impact of this draft. I think it's going to result in more guys who end up being steals because they didn't really get an opportunity to improve their stock. On the other hand, part of me thinks that some of these teams overthink usually, and they will have less information this year to overthink with. So I'm really interested to see how teams do in terms of their evaluation based on having less information, again, to overthink with.
Yeah. And we'll see if there's any ability to create the virtual combine or whatever else they may do between now and the draft, which is currently scheduled for October the 16th.
Yeah. That'll get pushed back.
Yeah. It feels like that's where this is all headed. So, well, someday there will be a draft. It will be weird. Nobody will be walking across stages or shaking the commissioner's hand. If they do somehow have it in person, everybody will be in masks. Maybe you'll just put on a team logo mask instead of putting on the traditional cap.
I like that.
I just blew your mind. That could be fun. The green room will have to be much more spaced out, of course. Adam Silver himself will be in a mask. Maybe it could be a David Stern mask. too soon? I don't know what it will look like. I suspect it will be virtual. I suspect that, like the lottery last night, it will be the strangest version of the draft we've ever seen. It'll be really interesting years down the road when people like go back to look at all the footage, or whatever, and they're like, "What the hell was going on back in 2020? Why are these people wearing masks? What's going like?" It's gonna be like 20, 30 years from now, people are gonna think this was just absolutely bizarre. Because it was. Anyway, someday there will be a draft, and before we have that draft, Jonathan Wasserman, we'll have you back on the Full 48 so that you can educate me once more when we get closer to the blessed event. So,
yeah, no, thanks for bringing me back. I'll be here for the next weird draft.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks so much.
All right, buddy. Thanks for having me.